Our next guest hasn't played in the NRL or represented his country in a World Cup. This guy's not even a professional athlete. But he is a Hollywood and Broadway megastar. He's won a Golden Globe, Emmy Award, Tony Award, and like Gus, was once voted the sexiest man alive. Direct from New York, dead set legend, Wolverine himself, Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, g'day Jacko, how are you, brother?
Hey, good morning, dead set legend. My sexiest man alive was about 20 years after yours, Gus. He was self-proclaimed in high school.
That's true. Hey, before we start this interview, Jacko, let's talk through the grease dancing competition at Pymble Public School back in the day. Let me talk you through it, boys. Melinda Capes and me, and Melinda Capes was by far the hottest girl at public school, right? Her and I dancing together in the final against Sarah Dowsett and Hugh Jackman. And what did you do to Sarah Dowsett that day, Jacko?
I went for one of the moves that looked so easy in the movie. But I actually dropped her on the floor.
It was not a good moment.
It was not a good moment.
And that,
tears
my friends, was it. It was so, all over. The big gold medal went to me and Melinda.
Is that your Stephen Bradbury moment? Everyone else fell over. Is that right?
That's a good point.
But you know what is shocking? I'm amazed you remember it, Gus, because he's never mentioned it once in all this time since we were nine. Not once.
Well, it's good to see you kicked on anyway, Hugh. That's great.
That's the reason why, man. Yeah. It hurts so much. So the rest of my life has been dedicated to proving him wrong.
You've done that.
Hey, Hugh, we got something in common, not just because we're both entertainers. obviously I was a rhino on that. But, mate, I've got to ask you about Manly. So as a kid growing up in Serena, I was a Manly fan because of Dale Shearer and Martin Bella. They're from there. Where did your love of Manly come from?
I mean, everyone in my family went for Manly, so I grew up absolutely loving all my brothers, my dad. He used to take us down to Brookvale Oval. But my dad is really straight. So we used to, every time we would go there, we would sit on the, you know, the bleachers there behind the goalposts at the north end. Yeah. And, you know, people would be swearing, and every time they swore, my brother and I would look at my dad thinking, he's going to tell them to stop swearing. Please, Dad, don't do it. But I remember, I mean, we saw, I'm back, it was Edie, and it was
Maxi Krilich and
Fulton. Max Krilich.
Yeah.
All, you know, way back in the day. And then, you know, right through, we just loved going down there. I still love going down there with my mates. And by the way, thrilled that the boys are a genuine top four side doing so well.
Jacko, I wanted to ask you, what are some of your fondest memories of, hanging around with Gus and some of those likely lads at school?
One of my favourite memories was just, I met Gus the first day of school. So we were kindergarten, five. We became best mates. And Gus always had the footy. So he brought the footy. And on like the first week, he came with the full Manly outfit.
Oh, mate.
You don't mind me mentioning this, Gus, do you?
He's
one of my greatest memories. And not just any uniform. Remember the special white uniform when they came out with the all whites with just the maroon little V on it? Oh, there he was. Gus just turned up and just so proud to be a Manly supporter and to wear his colours to school.
You've just cost him all of his speaking gigs at the Roosters. You've devastated him, Jacko.
No, but you know what? He's a bandwagoner sometimes.
Throwing me under the bus there, big fella.
In all honesty, man, like, I feel like the luckiest guy alive. Like, how rare is it that your best mate is the one you first meet when you're five, and here we are 51, 46 years later, still best mates, and genuinely best mates, and have been all throughout. So there you go, man.
Thank you, Jacko.
Yeah, give some tissues. That's all right.
Yeah,
awesome.
We're all tearing up here, big fella. Let's talk about your love of sport growing up, because we absolutely loved it, guys. Like most Aussies, you know, backyard, going next door neighbours, sleepovers, having great fun in the street and stuff. You were very lucky, weren't you? You had a fantastic street there in Bunyana Avenue in Maroonga. There's still some great mates that we're still with now. And you were very much a brother of mine, so you were in Orinoco Street as well. How great was it just growing up the way that we did?
Just incredible. I think back to the summers. I think back to, you know, like the amount of time we had to playing pool cricket in the street. Do you remember when we would go and score, mate? We were such tragics. We would score the cricket. Like, we'd get a cricket book and sit there for 5 days. We had no money. Remember, we used to buy the cookies from McDonald's, four packets of that would get us through the day.
Yeah.
And we would sit there and score it. We'd play backyard cricket. We played in everyone's teams. And, you know, sport was sort of the backbone for us, I think, not just mainly socially, really, growing up. And our love of it was, it's never diminished, and it's still all the banter with the boys is all about sport still.
We absolutely love it. And a great week this week for Liverpool. Obviously, a lot of us go for them, but Jacko supports Norwich City because his mum's Norwich. From Norwich, you know, and they are going down, my friend, and they are going down hard.
Oh,
as
really?
As one of the worst sides has ever played in the Premier League.
Oh,
Gus is one of the
eight.
Do
you remember the Milk
Liverpool
Cup in 1984?
You did.
We just go back to 1984.
They won. They beat Liverpool.
There's never been a team like it. One of the greats.
Norwich beat Liverpool in that cup, yeah.
Jacko, if we turn our eyes to the arts industry here at the moment, it's been on its knees in Australia. Uh-huh. And, you know, I guess they've just announced a $250 million stimulus to try and get it back on its feet. But how do you see the pathway for the next Hugh Jackman along the way?
Well, you know, it's devastating, mate. It, like 600,000 jobs. I actually had no idea that's how many people worked in the entertainment industry. You know, in a country of 20-odd million people, almost a million of them work in that. It's been absolutely devastating. And, you know, the pathway is going to be rough. I was meant to start rehearsal on a Broadway musical starting in a month, and that's been pushed back to next year. And so it looks like Broadway is going to be dark for like a year, which has never happened in a century. Yeah. However, there are some other places in the world, like Korea. Phantom of the Opera is still going in Korea, and they have a whole lot of protocols. So I feel like there's a glimmer of light. And, you know, I think as soon as it is safe for people to go back, people are going to want to go back because there is something. It's the same as sport, right? You can watch it all day long on TV, but there's nothing beats going there to the game. And it's the same for theater, obviously. You can watch films and TV shows, but when you're going to a show that you love and you're excited about, that feeling you get, it'll happen. But in terms of, I think it's actually in many ways one of the best times to be an actor, not this year, but there is just, but in general, there's so much content out there. There are so many TV shows, so many movies that, you know, you got the Amazon and Apples and Netflix and Hulu. Everyone is making stuff. So for writers, directors, actors, there is a need for content, and theater will come back. It'll be the last thing to come back, I think, like live performance. But if you're a young person getting into the industry, don't be deterred. There are so many opportunities, way more than when, not in this minute, but way more than when I began in this career. There's a lot more opportunities in Australia and overseas, so don't be deterred.
Hey, Jacko, really appreciate that. But look, I'm a person who loves my movies and stuff, and it's hard for you to probably to realise this, but I'm not that much of a deep thinker. But one of the first movies I saw you in, which I loved, was Swordfish. Because of Halle Berry, I thought she was unbelievable in that. And that was like a young Hugh Jackman. Mate, tell us about that.
Oh, mate, I think it was my third movie. I'm going to tell you a story. I don't know if it's, I can tell, I'm going to tell it.
Yeah.
So there's a scene in that movie. There's a scene in that movie. Gussie was reminding you about it last week, actually.
The laptop.
At the laptop. So I've been found out. I'm a genius hacker of computers, which, if you know me at all, is the greatest joke of all time. But I'm a genius hacker, and Travolta's got a gun to my head. Originally in the script, he was making me do drugs at the same time, and there's a girl under the table giving me a you-know-what. So, and I've got a minute, or I'm going to die, whilst all this is happening. So we shoot the scene, and Deb's not there. She's in Australia, and she was due to get back the next day, and we turn up to set the next day. I thought the scene was shot. And they said, oh, by the way, we just need another, we need your close-up of that. So we get back into the scene, and we call cut, we're done. I look over, and there's Deb standing at the monitor. And I'm like, Dave, I didn't really explain what I was shooting today. But anyway, she went straight up to the girl who was under the table, and the girl just looked at Deb and went, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. And she goes, relax, you're getting paid for it. Enjoy it.
And what I love about that story is when his dad watched the movie, because, of course, his son's now a motion picture guy, right? And his dad's a straighty 180, very religious and so forth. He wasn't so keen on that scene, was he, Mr.
Jackman? Really?
Well, I don't know. Publicly, no. He couldn't say he was, but I don't know.
Let's talk about movies for a moment, Jacko, because Bad Education just came out. We got it here on Foxtel. HBO bought it. And the reason why HBO bought it was they knew that it was going to be a wonderful film, but it's taken away an opportunity for you to actually be an Academy Award winner, because people are saying it's your finest performance ever. How close are we to perhaps getting the film, with COVID, getting the rules changed so perhaps you can get a crack at another Oscar?
Yeah, I'm sensing a petition, Gus.
Yes.
You know, if you could start a little petition for me.
Yes,
Jude, Del, definitely. Let's start with the Dead Set Legends. Yep. That'd be great.
We got some pulse about that.
Mate, I don't know. Look, you know, it's my view of all that stuff is it's icing on the cake. Try not to make decisions for that. If it comes, great. If it doesn't, great. You know, you've got to be sort of proud of your work, and I'm proud of the film, and I'm thrilled I did it. And I think it is not eligible, but, you know, I'm not... I've heard some rumblings that it may be, they may change the rules, but we'll see whatever shakes down, you know. I try not to get too caught up in it because, you know, I just don't want to make decisions for that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, sure.
Jack, the pressure of preparing for Oscars must be extreme. I mean, you've got songs to perform and you've got the Hollywood's elite and the world watching and things like that. And you're worrying about whether the jokes are going to flop and stuff like that. But, I mean, are you one that's having a laugh backstage? Or are you having a casual drink? How do you prepare?
No, I think if you looked at me from the outside, you think, oh, he looks pretty relaxed. But I remember very clearly the minute before I went on for the Oscars, I remember being in the wings, and there's a guy called Valdez. He's a guy who's got long dreadlocks. He's been the stage manager for 26 years. He's seen it all, right? Done them all. He's like, Mr. Jackman, if you just come over to the side here. And he's just getting quiet. Everything's getting hushed. 45 seconds, 30 seconds. And as that was happening, I could feel myself. I started to look down. I could feel myself going into the abyss. My mind was like, why the hell did you say yes? What the hell were you thinking? You are no Billy Crystal. You have no business being out there. I take a little peek and I can see Meryl and Brad. I'm like, oh. And I'm actually getting nervous now thinking about it. And I was like, oh, my God, this is a disaster. And I remember Valdez goes, 15 seconds. And he goes, Mr. Jackman, I looked up and he goes, good luck out there, mate. There's only about a billion people watching. if you look back at the tape, I'm actually, as I walk on, laughing, looking back into the wings. If it wasn't for Valdez, that would have been a nightmare.
Wow. You're incredible.
Mate,
that...
You guys, I actually think, sorry, Gussie, cutting you off, but that's what I've loved about my business, why I still love sport, why I'm so into it, and what we all have in common, because in that moment, on that Oscars, at that grand final, or whatever it is, the Super Bowl, where you want to be your best, you so want to be good, but how do you be relaxed in that moment? And that is that's the thing that we all kind of search for. That's the holy grail, really.
It really is, Jack. And we were obviously so proud of you, and you've done so many wonderful things that we've all been very proud of you about. But the fact is, you haven't changed a bit. You're extremely modest, and you are the greatest showman. And let's talk about the greatest showman for a moment, because that was a movie that you did. You would have had no idea how big that would have become, and how many families now adore you, because all the way from your daughter's age, Jude, all the way through to grandma and granddads, we've all sat there and we've all know the words to the songs, and we all get it now. One of the great moments of your career, The Greatest Showman.
Yeah, man. There's been a few parents who've come up to me and said, Mr. Jackman, I've seen your movie 100 times. And they're looking at me like, please don't make a sequel. The kids make us watch it every night. But mate, that was one of those great. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, dogs. If you haven't caught on, settle down, mate.
That's all right. We love dogs. Yeah.
Not the sharpest tools in the shed. We live on the 9th floor, and they think someone's coming in. but anyway, I remember when we opened. It was one of those things where I didn't get a call or an email from anyone. It was like crickets. Like, we were the second worst opening of all time. And it was the director, Michael Grace. He said to me, he goes, don't worry, man. Just watch. Like, in the new year, it's going to start picking up. People are going to... And I was like, Michael, this is your first movie, and this is my 25th. I said, it doesn't really... That's like a fairy tale. Anyway, he was right. And I'm so happy that we did it. I'm so proud of the movie. And it really touches me, particularly on how it kind of affects younger kids and families and how much it's meant to them.
That's awesome. Hey, dude, I don't know, have you ever met Jacko?
No, I've never met Jacko.
I'll tell you a story. I was lucky enough to meet Jacko. One of my mates, Gav Larkin, he was one of the founders of RUAK. Anyway, Jacko was going to the football that night, and I was ready to shoot something. The kids and that were there. And they come in, they said, oh, look, Jacko's got to go do something. Do you mind if he jumps in front of you? I said, no, not at all. And I tried to sort of not give it away, and I sort of stood there, and he walks in and just says hi to the kids and that, and sort of, he goes up, does his shot, as he comes down, he goes and sees the kids, and just what you see is what you get. So nice. He comes to me and he goes, "How going, Wendley?" He goes, "I've really enjoyed watching you play for the Wallabies, and you know, in rugby league, mate, it's been great, you know." And I sort of, I just, like, I was trying to, like, be cool on that. And I said, I really, really respect and watched you be the Wolverine. The Wolverine. Oh. He's done more than be the Wolverine. Oh. And he's actually going to watch
that. That was your moment.
That was my moment. That, yeah. And I just, I had nothing. Oh. And it was going to Brookvale to watch Manly play the Bulldogs that night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Champion. But champion,
yeah,
bloke.
Man. You know what that just reminded me of, by the way? Thanks for that story, man. How are the kids? How are they doing?
Yeah, they're going great. The young blokes in the Dragons are first grade squad, so he's had a couple of games, and the daughter's in grade 12, so I'm learning to be a full-time parent now, so that's been different.
Yeah, good on you, man. I remember, Gussie, do you remember when we were at Lord's watching cricket, and it was the first test match of that series, and got invited back to the dressing room, and Gussie and I are in there. We just, like, are speechless. We can't believe it. And then all... as we go around, remember Matty Hayden goes, "Hey, mate, do you want my bat?" And we're like, "Yeah. Yeah. Can you sign it?"
Yeah.
Like, and then everyone came up at some point and they're like, "Can I get a photo of Mr. Jackman?" I'm like, "Yeah. Can I get one with you?" Like,
remember, I think Justin...
because he's like, "Can I get in?"
Justin Langer said, "Do you mind if you speak to my wife?"
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He was phoning his wife and stuff. It was the fourth day of the first test, 2005, that magical series. And we're about to win the test match easy. And I think we needed four wickets the next day. So we always started to celebrate. And I spent 45 minutes out on that balcony where you see the players sit. With Ricky Ponting, who was in a towel the whole time, thinking
that's the Warnie balcony.
That's the Warnie balcony.
With the stump.
And you spent most of the, I think, we're there for a good 2.5 hours. Stuart McGill was giving us all drinks. Brett Lee was in the ice bath. Did we have just one of the great nights? And that's where an Aussie Goes Barmy got into Jacko's head. The idea of how can we find out who the characters are in that cricket team again? Because not many people get what Jacko and I got, but which was one of the most wonderful days of cricket. And then that night, wasn't
that
great?
I will never forget that, man.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it. Yeah.
It really was amazing. And we've had some wonderful times since then. Boys, we've got to wrap this up. We've had the man on the line too long. Anything quickly?
Can I finish with my seeing as we're reminiscing, and I know I've gone way over, so you're going to cut this out, but... Gussie, can I tell about the night you came to visit me on the set of Swordfish, seeing as you mentioned it?
Absolutely, brother. You, please, yes.
So, massive Travolta fan, both of us, massive. So, I'm in the movie with him. It took me about 3 weeks not to be just going, "Oh, my, it's Vinnie Barbarino." Right? Gus is there. Gus, and we're on a night shoot, and Gus says, "Mate, the kids go back home, Vic's go back home. I'm going to spend the night with you." I said, "Oh, that'll be awesome. I hate the night shoot, so that'd be great." At about 2 a.m, we get invited into John's, Travolta's trailer to smoke a cigar, and we're just like, "Oh, this is the best." So we go in there, and Gussie, it's just, the gloves are off. Every question he's ever wanted to ask, it comes out. He's just a mile a minute asking everything about this number in Greece and what about that, so they don't have fever, and he's chatting. It is, and he's smoking at the same time, and then all of a sudden he just goes deathly quiet. He goes white as a ghost, and he runs for the door, and just as he reaches the door, throws up all over the steps of Travolta's trailer.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm laughing my head off. I think this is the greatest moment in our friendship.
What are you doing?
And I never forget, remember, Gussie, John goes, "Phew, that's not what you do to your friends. That's... help him out. Don't laugh at him." Yeah. Which, of course, made me laugh a lot more.
That's so good.
It was one of those. Sorry, Gussie. I love Travolta giving it to you and making you upset. And Jacko, in the end, had to get the hose. Like, the boat brought a hose to hose down the steps.
That's right.
And Travolta goes, "No, you do that, Hugh. Yes, you do that. You shouldn't be laughing at him." He took me back to Jacko's trailer, which was about half the size as Travolta's, and I slept it off for a couple of hours. That was one of the great, one of the really great nights when you realise we actually went to have a meal before that, actually with all the cast and all the crew. And everyone who's like Jacko would normally walk to the front because they're important, blah, blah, blah. We're at the back of the queue and everyone looked around and Jacko said, "No, we're all good." So we got permission for them to go in front of him, and they all looked around and went, "You know what? He's going to be a star." And John Travolta was a great help to you. He gave you lots of good advice, and he was a tremendous person at the right time in your career, wasn't he?
Yeah, 100%. He gave me lots of great advice about the business, about everything, you know. And he's been a good friend to me over the years. It was just one of the many good times. Oh man, Vegas! All these things that come back to me. We don't have time, but
it's not mentioned Vegas.
Vegas is off. I'm sure I'm not the only one on this call with some Vegas stories, by the way.
No, you're not. Hey, Hugh, I just got to ask you one more thing about Gussie. Man, I'm really proud of him. We all love Gussie. He's got a big heart, but gotcha for life. I know you get asked to do a lot of charity stuff, mate. You're a great man, but you must be so proud of what Gussie's doing at the moment because we all need it.
Mate, we so do. Yeah. But in every way, Gussie has led that, you know, like, in a way that has been so inspiring to me and to everyone because it comes from his heart. You guys know Gussie. Like, he will cry at the drop of a hat. He's all heart. And as soon as he did that Man Up series, it was like a switch went on inside of him and was like, this is what I'm meant to be giving back. This is what I'm meant to be doing. And he's dedicated himself so well. And I've seen him speak. I'm sure you guys have too, when he goes to speak to people. You know, I've been with him in the car when someone's honked at the traffic light and said, mate, I'm really struggling. And, you know, and Gus has said, just go through the lights and pull over. And he's sat with him for an hour and had a chat with him, you know. So it's who he is, it's genuine, but it's changing lives. And Gotcha for Life is just an amazing organization that is really educating men and women about how to really support each other, how to be emotionally fit, and how to really take care of each other. And I'm proud to be part of it. I'm on the board, and I do stuff for him, but Gussie's the engine there, and mate, you're doing a brilliant job. And you're right, man, we need it more than ever now. Eight Aussies a day take their life, and we've got to get it down to zero. That's the goal, right, Gussie?
It's the goal, big fella. So we are building a world towards zero suicide. Jacko, thank you so much.
Thank you, mate.
Thanks for bringing that up, Del. I appreciate it. No, Jacko, it's been an absolute
pleasure. You guys are. Let me just wrap this up by saying you guys are dead set legends.
Yes!
Good on you, Jacko. You, love to the fam, mate. I'll talk to you soon.
Love you, buddy.
There you go. Hugh Jackman on the dead set. Goodbye. We've always said goodbye like we're Tony Kozier. Ever since we've been mates, we always go, goodbye.
I feel like Hugh's my best mate. Like,
You know what? It was a beautiful, and that was great. So I hope everyone enjoyed that. And if you missed it, of course, we'll get the whole interview on the podcast. More on the dead set legends in just a sec.